Welcome to episode 258 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace. I'm here with Nick and Marty. And if there's a few things in the world that are certain, it is death and taxes. We talk about taxes a lot, but maybe today, Nick, you might be bringing us something different. What do you got?
Death and assets and what happens to your assets if you experience death. Jace, question. You're a very trusting man. Very trusting man. Some might say too trusting. Would you leave your inheritance, as far as dealing with your inheritance, up to the government, our trusty government?
Oh, easy one. Didn't even have to swallow that grape as fast as I did. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not, Marty?
You know, yeah, no, that's it.
Oh, that's a rhetorical question for me. There's no hope in hell that that's happening.
Anyone who listens to The Numbers Game know that we've got quite a bit to say about the government at times, so resounding no's from Jason Marty.
Yep. Yeah, and I think it'd be resounding no from, you know, anyone who has asked that question. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've spoken about wills before and the importance of having a will. I did see a show last week, and it just talked about someone's experience who didn't have a will. And it reminded me of an experience that I had myself with my grandparents and, you know, helping my mum out get through that. And I thought it would be worth talking about, you know, the implications of not having a will, as in not so much your money not going to the right area, but the delays that it can cause. And second to that, just how it's becoming more and more important because people are dealing with a lot of wealth now, whether they've considered themselves wealthy or not. You know, if you've got, a mum and dad who have passed away and they had a decent house in a decent suburb in Melbourne, there's every chance there's $2 million worth of inheritance to be dealt with. The superannuation scheme, you know, people never used to have super. Now there's big super balances being left. Life insurance policies, share markets are at all-time highs. So if they've had shares, they're now worth more than what they were 10 years ago. So there's this spike in wills being contested at the moment because of these particular reasons. Just to give you some stats, because Jace, you're a numbers man, 60% of Australians now die without a valid will. In 2024, in New South Wales alone, there were 1,461 contested estates.
Wow.
Just last year. 30,000 probate cases handled in the New South Wales courts just last year. So obviously New South Wales show I watched. Uh-huh. And obviously we deal with superannuation in our business. For your superannuation to go to the right dependent, if you don't have a will in place, you have to sign what's called a binding death nomination. So for me, if I was leaving it to my daughter, I would do a binding death nomination and I'd have to update that every 3 years. The reason you've got to update them is, you know, marriage breakups, you know, it might not even be a marriage. It could just be a separation where you had your partner and then that changes. So every 3 years that needs to be updated. But as it stands at the moment, 6.5 million Australians have no binding nominations in place with inside their super.
Wow.
So it's a big issue at the moment, and you can see why things are getting contested, particularly with split families where things aren't, it's not obvious what's going to happen. But anyway, that kind of talks about the issue that we've got, but I wanted to talk about the process that would happen if you don't have a will. And that is, it gets dealt with by the state trustees. And I think going back, my personal experience is my grandparents. So, you know, they would have been sort of in their 90s now, late 80s, 90s. They've both passed away. And, you know, hardworking Australians, not considered wealthy. So when I say not considered wealthy, not the type that would think that they should get a will or see a lawyer. So they actually put all of their faith, and my grandfather in particular put all his faith in the state trustees, because that's what he knew. That's what he knew, and he thought that that's how things would get dealt with, in the best way they could. So our particular case was not so much that the state trustees did the wrong thing with the money. It was just the process that we had to follow and the emotional drain and, in the end, monetary drain that that caused. So my grandparents had a house on the Central Coast, a little town called Yumina, right near Gosford, beautiful town. Paid nothing for the property. You know, it was worth quite a bit of money by the time they passed away. My grandfather used to tell me all the time he paid in pounds and built the house and all that kind of stuff. But when they both passed away, it went to the state trustees to be dealt with. And the state trustees is obviously a government organisation, so it's highly under-resourced. And I reckon we were with the state trustees for about a year. And all we were trying to do is get the state trustees to appoint a real estate agent to sell the house. So we had to put up three agents that were that we wanted, or we wanted to recommend to sell the house, something like that. And then they would get different valuations because they're the trustees, so they're trying to get the best result, so they want to be involved. And it was a few years ago, and you may or may not remember, but New South Wales had some torrential rain a couple of years ago, and this was an old house and it got absolutely pelted with rain, and in the 9 months that it sat there doing nothing, not on the market, there was a lot of damage, and it had a massive impact on the valuation. And also the property market had come back slightly from when, you know, it really should have been sold. So that was my personal experience. And then I see this story on the news the other night about a guy named Tim Brigden from Sydney. So Tim's family nominated state trustees. Both of his parents have died. He is the only child. So there is no other kids. He's the only child. So his assumption is that his parents, and my assumption would be too, his parents' inheritance will pass to him. Tim has now spent 3 years arguing with New South Wales public trustees. And what he's trying, this is his own words, what he's trying to argue with them, that it's in the estate's best, it's in the estate's best interest that he is actually the trustee. So, you know, there could be more to this story because, you know, you don't really know. But the reality is, on the surface, he's the only child. And he's now been doing or fighting this for 3 years. So you've got costs from a legal point of view. You've got the emotional drain. You've got the opportunity cost of not having that inheritance working for you in other ways. But it's for me, it's just the timing. And it just reminded me of the process that we went through. And how can it go on for 3 years? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, it should be able to be dealt with really, really quickly. So people don't, it's not just about the will, and we would have said this in the last episode, but it's not just about getting the money to the right place. It's the speed and how quickly it can happen. And you don't want to be in the position where you are dealing with a government organisation that's heavily under-resourced, that's dealing with more and more cases because it's only going to get worse. Any personal stories or any experience with state trustees? You boys?
No, I haven't, but I find it challenging to, like you said, I didn't have a will the last time we spoke about this and I ran out pretty quickly and got one. So it had an impact, that discussion. But again, yeah, it's the lack of control. It's not even the speed of money, but all of a sudden someone else is controlling your own family's assets. And mm-hmm. I don't like that because you're disempowered and then you're having to fight for something because you're going through enough grief with the death of the person, right? Let alone now having to fight a battle on the back of it to try and do what's, you know, get what's right. So no matter even if there's a positive outcome, it just feels like a really horrible process to go through emotionally and financially. So it's, I think... Yeah, definitely get a will.
Yeah. And one of the biggest issues they pointed out too on this particular story was the rise in popularity of online will kits and just the issues that they cause, because there's a lot of factors that aren't considered. And yeah, you know, not to repeat myself, but this wasn't a problem sort of 50, 60 years ago. Now that properties are worth so much, wills are getting contested or estates are getting contested. And yeah, I just think yeah, it's so easy to get a will and it's so simple that it's something everyone should be doing.
I think you make a good point there, though, with the will kits, because people generally go to the cheapest option without recognizing that could be the most expensive. Mm. Really? Yep. But that's where the general, you know, general consensus people will go to that as the first point of call. So, Nick, just in, I mean, you do estate planning there at Innovate as well. So you're sort of, you know, sharing strategies in regards to how to best, you know, utilize that sort of transition. What do you see, or what have you read, or what do you know in regards to the difference between those will kits and actually having something that's very, you know, that's through a lawyer?
Yeah, I think there's a lot, like some of the key things that aren't considered are, you know, like blended families and, you know, who could contest this? And I think when without an expert on the other side of the table asking you specific questions, they're things that you're probably not going to be thinking about yourself. That's probably the best way I can explain it. So, Marty, if you fit, you know, you're obviously a finance and a business expert. So if you sit across the table from someone who's not and they're thinking about buying a business, you're going to challenge them on aspects. What if aspects? What if this happened? What if that happened? It's not just them saying to you, oh, Marty, I want to buy this business. It looks great. Look at the bottom line. Can't wait. You're going to say, okay, well, what's the long-term viability of the industry? What's your competition look like? What happens if you leave? You lose one of the key people? You know, what's your long-term goal here? You're trying to build a business that you don't need to be in. So these questions get asked by the right people, being lawyers or family estate lawyers, that will combat any of these issues that could come up when it does come time for your will to be initiated and possibly contested. So, yeah, that's probably the best way I could explain it without going into actual things.
That's a great point. I've been working sort of just with an architect doing a little reno, and they've got a design background, and I go, I had sort of ideas on what I wanted, and then having an expert on it, I just go, you don't know what you don't know till you realize you know nothing. And it's like, and that would be the same, I would think, sometimes with clients, sometimes in the legal field, definitely. So again, when you feel exposed because you're going far out, I just don't know. I don't understand any of this really. It's important to get the right direction and really protect yourself with the right information.
A couple of ones to add to the either not having a will or having a poorly drafted will from, you know, a basic kit that doesn't go into detail. Family trust with corporate trustees or family trusts. Mm. So often it talks about in a will, it says, I'm going to leave this asset to this person. But if that asset was actually owned in a family trust, it wasn't up to that person to put that in their will to then pass that on because it's the family trust asset, not that particular individual's asset. So there's an issue that pops up straight away. Comes down to then understanding, accountants will go and recommend structures for clients. We do it, we're guilty of it, you know. We send a bunch of info and just expect a client will read it. But, you know, you need to understand what is an appointor. And the appointor is who really controls the trust because they can remove and appoint a new trustee. So, you know, if the person who passed away was the director of the trustee company or the trustee, it's the appointor who needs to then go and make the change to who that person is. So this should be laid out in the will. If a will fails to nominate a new appointor to the trust, then all of a sudden it can be unclear of who this passes to, and it may end up with an unintended person becoming in control. There's also beneficiaries of a trust. Often, as you said, Nick, blended families, marriage breakdowns, new marriages that come along. You may have started a family trust in your original marriage. You may have separated from your partner and you have a new partner. But if you're departed spouse is still listed as a primary beneficiary, could open up some issues. So you need to look at amending previous family trusts.
Yeah. And another thing I'll add to that, you see this a lot where your ex-partner is the primary beneficiary and not your children. And the ex-partner remarries, which means you kind of lose control over your kids getting that money because there's now a third party involved that, number one, you don't know, obviously, and number two, you have no control over and you don't know what they're like. So if that new partner coming in is rogue, there's all kinds of things that can happen. We've seen that quite a few times.
Yep, seen that in family personal story as well, where new wife comes in and changes were made to the will. Yeah, pretty devastating effects.
Yep.
The other ones on that list are then, flow on from trusts. You've got companies. If you're a director of a company, a shareholder of a company, especially in private companies like what you were just saying, Nick, but, need to say if you are a sole director and sole shareholder and it's your will and you're passing away, where does that control go to? What is the expectation of what happens to that? And often the part of family business disputes is, who gets what in a sense of a business and also getting the value out of that. And in this new day and age, Nick, you guys probably see it a little bit innovate, but digital assets, cryptocurrency in a wallet, whether it's I think it's hard or cold or hot or cold, a few different words for it. I'm going to get drilled by the crypto people online that just think I've absolutely cooked that. But the crypto wallet, you need a key. No key, no asset. So all of a sudden you might have invested in Bitcoin, Ethereum, any crypto asset. And all of a sudden, if something happens to you and you think your loved ones are going to get that, is it clear how it's accessed, where it is held, what is the password to get in? Because quite often this stuff disappears and, it'll never be found again. Just a couple of extra ones to add in there.
Yeah, all great points. And I think one of the main messages that I wanted to get clear here was the faith that my grandparents had in the state trustees. Mm-hmm. So they thought they were doing the right thing. And look, at the end of the day, it all worked out. But I obviously wasn't around in that era, but I kind of got the feeling that, okay, this age group, this is what they were taught was the right thing. And if you think back to, 50s, 60s, whatever, however far you want to go back, you can imagine that probably only the wealthy had lawyers. Mm. That's what I'm assuming. So my grandfather in particular, as I said, he had complete faith in the state trustees, and he actually wanted them involved because they would act as the middle person in between sisters, So I guess the other message is, if you are in your, if you've got elderly parents, it is worth asking the question, not to, be able to drive the will in a particular way, but hey, have you got a will in place? And just make sure they don't go, oh, no, it's with the state trustees and that's the best option because that's how we do it. So that's probably the thing that really surprised me, that my grandfather thought that was the best way to go and was doing what he thought was the right thing because he probably just didn't know any better,
100%. I think if the fact that we've done a follow-up episode on this, it's clear that it is a key issue that people need to take seriously. Just like the last episode, we stressed, go out there, look into it, get a referral if you need one, reach out to myself, Nick or Marty if you want a referral to someone that can help you out if you don't have someone in your network.
Jason, Nick, is it just an estate planning lawyer or you just go to a general solicitor? Like when do you go to those two? Are they different? Just so to give the audience something on that.
Yeah, there's people that specialise in estates, but most law firms will have someone within their group that does that. Now that's generally how it works. As it do different specialise in different areas. So, and if they don't, they'll refer you to someone. Financial planners the same. Like we work with, we obviously don't do the legal side, but we work with a group, a couple of groups that that look after the family estates for us, for estate planning.
Pretty sure as well, a will for it to be legally binding and done properly needs to have a few people formally present face to face. I think multiple people have to sign at the same time, in person, in a room, just to make it legally binding as well. So if you are doing one online and it's digital signature and it's remote, probably a red flag there that you actually need to get into a room with the appropriate parties when it comes to setting things up properly and having it legally binding.
Yep, exactly right.
It's an absolute banger again. It's we exist to help people learn, to share education, to share our war stories and to share other people's war stories. So Tim, New South Wales, hopefully you're getting it sorted. There was an article, in late September, there was an article still going with Tim and lawyers still fighting this. So don't be Tim. Get out there, get your will sorted. If you haven't contacted Innovate and you don't have a financial advisor, this is also a good time to get your superannuation looked at, get that binding death nomination sorted. Innovate, look after. I've actually just got a message from Macy. Casey and I have a meeting with Innovate this evening to go over our budget and talk all things exciting. So lucky day. But this isn't about me. It's not about just Innovate, although we do love Innovate here at The Numbers Game. This is about you getting your will sorted and being safe and secure and not having things go pear-shaped when you are gone. Until next time.
Protect your loved ones. Control your assets. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.